For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
So this is actually going to be a little bit of a follow-through of last week's share. So this week we get to the Teichacha, we get to the admonition, as is referred to, the rebuke, the consequences, the Torah says, and the Chukosai Teilech, if you do follow in my laws, all of these blessings will befall you, and if you don't, so then you'll have all of these horrible things that take place. And there are a series, I believe it's three different series of calamities that are described. So we are going to be, we'll go through a little bit of one of them, starting in Pasuk Chav Zayin, we'll go through the Psukim. Meaning, I've already sent you a series of klalos, a series of curses, and if it doesn't work, if even after this you still do not listen to me, and you still walk with me, so to speak, without any permanence, and just, that's what I'm looking for. Yeah, haphazardly. Then I will walk with you with such a with a vengeful anger. And then I will punish you, not just tit for tat, one for one, but I'm going to get you with seven for each one of your chata'im. So you'll have afani sheva al chato seichem. So now what should come up? How many should we find? How many calls should be in this coming paragraph? And it's not high school education, this is basic stuff, right? If you sin, I'm going to give you seven times. How many should we find coming up? We should find seven. Oh, you're still holding in the story. I know, it's okay. Okay, so here we go. So I actually numbered them for you so that you wouldn't have to do too much math late at night. It's right there for you. Ready? Here we go. V'achaltem basar v'neichem u'v'sar v'noseichem tocheilu. You will eat the flesh of your sons and the sons, the flesh of your daughters you will eat. So we jump right into a pretty awful one. So that's number one. I just parenthetically, there are some, I heard this in one of the shuls that I ended up davening Mincha Maariv while I was away last week. So someone got up to say Dvar Torah in between, and he said that there was one of the Hasidim used to darshan each one of the klalos of this week's parsha would find a way of looking at it as a bracha. And even though there's a klala, but there's a way it could be somehow a bracha. So they got to this pasuk, v'chaltem v'sar b'neichem v'sar b'noseichem tochei, it's just horrible. Like, how do you come up with anything positive in this? And then they came up with, you know, it's a big thing to be able to have one of the statements of that, you know, that one of the big challenges that a person should not only be shomer Torah mitzvahs themselves, but that the next generation, their children, should be from. The bracha of Yachaltim Basar, you'll go to your children's house and you'll eat from the meat. You'll eat from their home. Yachaltim Basar Benechem, Uvasar Benosechem, Tochel. You'll still be able to eat at their family's son nice, even though that's not at all what the.
Not
at all. And after he concluded, he said, and that's why we say Rabbi Chananim and Akash Amar before saying Kaddish, because you're not really sure if such Vortlach actually counters. But in any case, so not to take away from the severity of what's being said. So number one, Vachaltim Basar, you'll literally eat of the flesh of your children. V'hishmadati es b'moseichem, and I will destroy your tall buildings. V'hichrati es chamoneichem. That's number two, and I will cut down your gods. Chamoneichem is a word for one of the, like a sun god or some type of god, which Rashi says is not one of the seven, because that's just the result of the fact that your big tall buildings will be destroyed, so I'll cut down your gods. V'nasati es pigreichem al pigrei gilulechem, and I will place your corpse, your bodies on the idolatrous beings that are now spewed across the ground. That's number three. So we have again, you'll eat the flesh of your children, I'll destroy your buildings, your corpses will be strewn about the streets. The Go'ala Nafshi Eschem, and my soul, my spirit, Hashem says, will be disgusted by you. I will leave, my presence will not be able to tolerate you. That's number four. Number five, in Asatias Arechem Charba, I will place your cities or make your cities desolate. Fahashimosi es Mikdashechem, and I will destroy, number six, your holy places. Velo Ariach Bereach Nichoichem, and I will no longer smell or take any pleasure in the karbonos that you offer. This is straight out of Rashi. I didn't underline it, but it's on the bottom of the page. Fahashimosi es Mikdashechem, Rashi goes through the seven exactly as I did. I just did it for you so we don't have to look up and down, up and down, and up and down. Those are the seven. Now, the paragraph began that if you don't listen to me, I will put seven things on you. So what should happen now? We just hit the seven. So what should come now? Well, there shouldn't be any more, because we're done. We deserved it. We were told that we were going to get. We got the seven. Well, we keep reading. V'hashimosi ani es ha'aret. I will destroy or lay desolate the land. V'shamamu aleho aivechem hayoshvim bo. And even the enemies that will dwell upon it, it will still remain. They will be desolate. It will all be desolate while they're on it. The whole land will just lay in complete desolation. Well, there's another one. The land will be completely desolate. V'eschem ezareh. Bagoyim, and then you I will disperse amongst the nation. And I will have then you'll be pursued by sword. Your land will be desolate. And your land again will be completely in the state of destruction or destroyed. And now we finally get to the end. That's it. So that's the puzzle we discussed last week. Then finally, when you're out and the land is desolate, will it finally be appeased and have the chance to rest for all of its shavosos, kol yimei hashama, all the days of its desolation, v'atem be'eretz aivechem, while you are in the land of your enemies, oz tishpas ha'aretz v'hirtzos es shavsoseha. And then, finally, it will take the Shemitah in, all the Shemitahs that you did not finally have. Now, without you know the details, Rashi's going to address a certain problem here, as we've been foreshadowing. How many are we supposed to get? Seven. After the seven, we have the pasuk of the land will be desolate. I will disperse you amongst the nations. And then the land will finally be appeased from all of the Shemitahs that were not have observed. So, where are the extras?
Can't they also be like the other one was? It's like a consequence of the, it's part and parcel of it?
So it could be, but it seems to fit as the land being desolate as fitting along the lines of the other things that have been mentioned. So Rashi says a fascinating thing. Says Rashi in Pasuk Lamed Beis, it's actually on the left-hand side of your page, on that first page. V'hashimosi ani es ha'aretz. Now this is the number, this is what we would have called number 8. This is the first one after the 7. I will lay your land desolate, says Rashi. Zumi d'tova l'Yisrael. This is not a klala, that the land will be desolate. You read it as a klala. It sounds like I'm going to knock down your tall buildings and your corpses will be strewn about the field and your cities will be destroyed and your holy places and your land. Sounds like it's just flowing right after all it. No. Your land laying desolate is a midah tova. That's a blessing to the Jewish people. Shelo yimtzu ha'oivim nachas ruach be'artzam. The land will be so desolate, your enemies will never find rest. They'll never find peace. They'll never find prosperity. Shetehei shomeima miyoshveha. The land will be desolate from its inhabitants. So you think it's a kala? The kala already happened. The seven things that I described, you're going to be destroyed. The land is a source of consolation. After I knock down your buildings and your corpses are strewn about and your cities are empty, but the land will be desolate. I'm telling you, it's a blessing. Because you're going to be kicked out, but so will everybody else. This has been, it's not even necessarily the focus that we're talking about. Mark Twain writes in the 1800s, when he visits Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael, he says, I don't know what this big deal is. This place is a wasteland. It's uninhabitable. There's no economy. It's complete poverty. There's not a green thing growing anywhere. It's terrible. And it's one of the blessings when you go to Eretz Yisrael today, you see it's just green everywhere, the produce, and it's beautiful, and the land has just literally sprung to life when the Jewish people have come back, and that's this Rashi. That's the Rashi. And if you go through the Siddur, I'm off topic now, but I can't help myself when I get into these topics, I'm sorry. When you go through the Shmoneh Esrei, you see the order of the redemption. We say Borech Aleinu first. In the very beginning of Shmoneh Esrei, is Borech Aleinu. First we get to Refeinu, and then we get to Borech Aleinu. Bring back our prosperity, then to Kavishor for Godul, then it's Temach David. But the first step, and the Gemara talks about this, what the order of Shemona Esrei, the first step that you'll see the Geula, you'll see the land will come back to life. The land will sprout, the land will be green, and then we have all the next steps, to Kavishor for Godul, Chereseinu, the name of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is rebuilt after the land comes back, and then it's Temach David, and then the complete and final redemption. Anyway, it's all out of this Rashi. Where did Rashi get this from? Well, you have, the Torah says seven, and then after the seven you have the land will be desolate, says Rashi, that's not one. And then you have Pasuk Lamed Gimel Ve'eschem Ezare. You, I'll disperse you. Well, what happens to that? We had the seven, then we get away with one, the land, that's not really a bad thing, but us being dispersed, well, what's with that? Says the Maral, there are two stages of the punishments. You have the punishments in Eretz Yisrael, and then you have the punishments which will happen after. So that when the Torah says you're going to get seven, though we'll read part of it inside, those seven are only a reference to the seven in Eretz Yisrael. Then you have number eight, the land will be desolate, but that doesn't count because that's not really a klala, that's a blessing of consolation to you. And then that you'll be dispersed amongst the nations and all of Pasuk Lamed Gimel, and you'll be pursued by the sword. That's true, it's more than seven, but that's okay because the seven only counts in Eretz Yisrael. The eighth is really blessing, it's a consolation that the land will be desolate, and then that which is continued, that's not Eretz Yisrael anymore.
It's going through the timeline.
Correct. And the seven is only in Eretz Yisrael. Moral says it as follows, and we'll see, and then we'll spend the rest of the time in the Moral discussing what he says it. On the bottom of that first page, in the left-hand corner, Elo Al-Karchach, he's describing why Rashi says that it's a good thing that the land will be desolate. Al-Karchach says the Maharal, Dehai Dechsiv Basrei, the psukim which come after the land being desolate, Heim Achar Shegolu Min Haaretz. That's after the people are exiled. And it doesn't bother us that there are more things in this list. We only care about what happens before the exile. Ki Dechsiv Eschem Ezor HaBagoyim, the last pasuk, V'chol Hashev HaMakos, the seven, Heim Be'odom Al Ha'adama, Kedei Sheyachzeru B'tshuva. The list of seven is only while they're still in the land. And what's the purpose of those? They should return. And therefore, that's how the Maral explains this listing over here. Now, this is the kind of Maral which I love. The Rashi itself, forget the Maral, just because anyone reading this book would never know. Who's counting how many things? Whatever. Well, what do you mean, whatever? Pay attention. So when you pay attention, you run into a problem. Seven, they're eight, then they're nine. So says Rashi, seven in it. Maral and Rashi together nets that following result. Seven in Eretz Yisrael. Eight's a consolation about the land, that it never will allow anyone to dwell in it. And nine, ten, it doesn't matter because we're already outside of the land. Problem that we have here is the Maral's language. So what's the difference? Yeah?
Why does it really matter whether the punishment is in the land or out of the land? It's the punishment for the people. The land isn't sin, it's the people.
Excellent. So let's rephrase that exact same question and using the Maral's language. How did the Maral explain what's the significance of the difference between in the land or out of the land? Maral answered your question. She asked you, but that doesn't help us, though. It raises more questions. So in the land...
But it's still, the list of seven, it shouldn't matter, was before after Tshuva. If you're still punishing us, then you're punishing...
So let's put I'm agreeing to your question. Let's put it in the context of his language. Why is the significance of seven in the land? Because what's the purpose of those? She asked you, but that's his language. Okay, now he got kicked out. And now there are more? You didn't change. There are going to be more. You're going to be dispersed. You're going to be pursued by the sword. 9, 10, we lose count at that point. What's the point of those? Is it not Shechter B'Tshuva? I would thought so.
Mm-hmm.
But the Maral says, his language is very clear, the seven that we care about, those are only in Eretz Yisrael, because those are Kedei Shechter B'Tshuva. And what about us? What about all the suffering that we got? That's apparently something else. So tonight I want to share with you, we'll do it briefly. This is going to be not a Maral Torah, it's going to be a Rav Hartman Torah trying to explain this Maral. Because this is a very problem, it's just a difficult language. It's basically your question, what's the difference? You sin, I punish. I punish seven times your sin. Wherever you are, the goal should have been change your ways, come back to Torah Mitzvos, and live happily ever after. But we're saying no. In Eretz Yisrael, seven, outside, do whatever. And only in Eretz Yisrael, because Yachzeh B'Tshuva.
But can you say that, like, there's a special, like, Yom Mishnah in Eretz Yisrael, so, like, Hashem, like, more...
Absolutely. But isn't it still for the same purpose of Kadesh Yachzeh B'Tshuva? Isn't that the goal? Isn't that what we're waiting for, trying to accomplish? So if Harman explains as follows, on the second side of your page, we'll start from the Imkain, that first underline. He read the first half of that note 114. He goes through expressing the question that we just expressed. In Kain Mahu Habir Lidvarav, what is the explanation of his redemption? See where I am? Sorry, I'm on the page Reisam of Vav on the second side.
Okay.
I'm the first underline in note 114. Sorry about that. Being Cain says, "Mahu hab." This is Rav Hartman. Mahu habir ledvarav kan. What is the explanation of the Maral's language? Shirak hamakol shebe eretz Yisrael hein kedei sheyachzeru b'tshuva. Why does he imply that? Al korchach lomar. Going to the next underline. Shebevadai hamakol eretz Yisrael uvegalus trovayu mechaperes avon. It has to be that all makos that we receive, all punishment, all affliction is a kapara of avon, is sometimes atoning for our sins. Achachilaku, what's the difference? Shehamakos be'eretz Yisrael bo'os kitoychacha. In Eretz Yisrael, they're coming as rebuke, uchema oreres lechuva, to arouse us to tshuva. Ve'ilu hamakos begolos bo'os ka'onesh. They're coming as a punishment, Yisrael, to purify us from the impurity of sin. All right, let's describe what try to explain what he says over here. Let's use his example first. The Maral describes the difference. There are two types of punishment the Torah gives for different types of averus. One is a death sentence, and one is makos. Makos are lashes given in sets of 3 all the way up to 39, depending on how much a person can handle, which is one set of punishment for certain things, and you have death. So we've already discussed this as a kapara not. So if you think about the difference between the two types of punishments, why would a person receive makos? What's the goal of makos? A person does something wrong, eats unkosher food, he's warned, eats it anyway, we're going to give you makos. Why do we give you makos?
Wouldn't it like to get them back to their like natural state of wanting to be eating the...
Certainly a major part of it. You could say even simpler, just, you know, to get him back on the straight. You could say it that way, which is true. On the level, punishment, the purpose of the punishment would be that he doesn't do it again and that he now behaves correctly on the most simple level. Or you could say it on a deeper level like that. However we would say it, would any of those things apply to the death sentence?
In this world.
Right? Why not?
Because it's over.
It's over. So you have to stop and think. There's a fundamental difference between the goal of why I would give two sets of punishments. When I give makos, my goal is to change your behavior so that moving forward, you will see things, approach things, do things differently. The death sentence is not at all. It's that you have gotten to a point where you forfeited the right to live, to be here. So why do I bother? What's the point of the killing? It will in some way prepare you for the next world. You'd otherwise be in huge trouble if you get there. You forfeited your life. It should be some type of a kapara, but it's not to fix you, because we're not putting it back on go and starting you around the board again. It's over. You think about a school setting, right? There are different types of punishments. There are some things you could do in which you get expelled. We say, that's it. You're done. We're finished. We don't want to see you again. In some way, you can say, we're really trying to fix him so that when he goes to the next place, he'll realize how bad it is. But most schools that would expel a student really aren't thinking that way. They're simply thinking, we can't handle you anymore. We can't deal with it. So you're out. What does that do for the child? Very little. Nothing. What it does for the school says, I can't. Let's assume it was a kind of thing, he's selling drugs on campus. All right, we gotta be. All right, we can't have that here. So what does it do for the child? Nothing. Who's it helping? School, the body of the institution is saying, we have to remove the problem. Child does something far less egregious, and we give you a detention. What's the purpose of that? So you could say the same thing, but it's really not. We're somehow trying to give a type of punishment that would deter you from doing it again. Fundamentally different. Fundamentally different. Says Rav Hartman, to explain, based on Makos Misa, there's a difference between the punishment we get in Eretz Yisrael and the punishment of Gaulus. When we're in the land, when we're still there, we're holding on, and Hashem is trying to keep us. Don't make me do this. Don't. It's the principle begging the kid, please, don't. Don't do it again. I'm going to have to throw you out. that's a punishment that says you're still here, you're still going to be around, you're going to survive this punishment, but I want you to change. I want this to work. That, says the Maral, says Rav Hartman, explaining the Maral, is what the Chumash says, Sheva, Ad Kan, no more. There's a limit. There is a limit. I will not do more than that. If you can't get the message after seven, I throw you out, but I won't punish you anymore. In the land. Because the in the land punishment is, I'm trying to keep you here. Once you get thrown out, then we shift into Misa. It's no longer Makos. It's no longer lashes. Now it's a death sentence. What's the purpose of the death sentence? In Rav Hartman's language, it's Lezachech es Yisrael mezu hamasachet, to purify the Jewish people from the impurity of sin. You have a metal and there are impurities in it. How do you get the impurities out? You burn it out by fire. To change your way? I'm not here for that anymore. It's embedded in your essence. I have no other way to get it out other than by fire. And the purpose of the fire is to drip out all of the impurities, that what I'm left with is pure. I tried so hard to do that earlier with a limitation, with makos. It was going to be lashes. And I tried, and I tried, and I tried, but there's a limit. 39 lashes, that's it. We don't do more than that. Sheval chatosechem, and if it doesn't work, exa. And then, there's just additional ones. That's it? No number to it? That's right. There's no number to it. If you get past my number, and I send you out, there'll be others. But there's a difference between when I say they're going to be others. It's like a trip, when you know, like, it's an hour long. Okay, an hour, I time myself. We're going on a trip. How long is it? I don't know. It's eternal. What do you mean? It's the introvert going into a social setting and is not being told how long it's going to last. Please, that's not fair. Like, I need to pace myself. How long? So that's the second set. The first set is seven. Okay, so now we got to start dealing with them, but we know it's it. But then Golas. And then after Golas, I give you more. But how many is it going to be? I'm not saying. Because it's not until you're purified. So says Rav Hartman, in explaining, so let me just read it in detail and take you right when you comment on the last two lines that are underlined. V'lechoyra habir ledover who? Explanation of this is Shahoinshim be'eretz Yisrael nitnin oy bechdei lemnoya es hagolus. In Eretz Yisrael they're given either to prevent the golus from happening, oshem hascholus hagolus Yisrael miyart, or it is the process of golus if they don't do tshuva. Ach liachar shahagolus kfar chala. But once we're out, we're done, we're finished. Im kein hustra haritzua, then the strap, like the strap to beat someone, is given permission. It's free for all. There's no reason to put a limitation on it. As the Gemara says, Umiyom Shechorav Beis HaMikdosh B'chol Yom V'yom Miruba Klaloso Mishel Chaveiro. From the day the Beis HaMikdosh has been destroyed, every day is Klal is worse than the day before. And that's what we live in. We live in post-Golos Onchin, in which there's no limitation, there's no number, there's no waiting. It's just an eternal period to purify us from our sins, as opposed to what we might have had, or we did actually have in the original stages of the Golos of Eretz Yisrael. While we were there, it was with a number, it was with a limitation to actually just change our behaviors rather than to purify us. Yeah?
What's the difference in, let's say, tshuva and to purify? Like, does it, if we did tshuva, would that have also purified us? Or those are two separate...
Yeah, there's an element of kapara and of atonement within that. The difference is in whether or not the goal is I'm going to teach you to change your way, or this is just that purification process.
With tshuva is like two in one, and in galus it's just the kapara.
Yeah, I would almost say, and again, I hate doing this because I hate doing it, but it's effective, even though it's hard to say it. What did we learn from the Holocaust? In terms of Jewish behavior, I have no idea. I have no idea. I've thought about it. I've studied it. I have no idea. What? The Reform movement? I don't know. Is that who knows? We don't have a Navi. So without a Navi, so if you punish me and you don't tell me, is it just Bifrum? Is that the lesson? I don't know. That's a hard one. And the answer is we don't have an answer because we're in the stage of zichuch hachet, purification process. In Eretz Yisrael, you had a Navi who said, Rabbi Yisai, in recent Tanakh, here's the problem. This is the problem. They would say, Shabbos, you're intermarried. The Navi says, you had a Navi. We don't have a Navi, so you've shifted. I'm getting clopped and clopped and clopped. What do we learn from the Spanish Inquisition? I don't know.
Nowadays is more on a personal level, but the kapara is more on the nation.
That's how he would say it.
We do tshuva. I mean, we have yom
correct.
Every year. I mean,
every day, 100%.
We don't bother with tshuva anymore.
100%. But we've shifted out of, the Maral would say, or Rav Harman would explain the Maral, and again, it is not the Maral's language himself, this is Rav Harman explaining it, that we've shifted when you go through out of Eretz Yisrael, already into the Golus, you've shifted from the type of punishment, which is a Makos type punishment, which is, You're going to live after this. I just want you to live differently. To you have impurities within you that need to come out, and it's a hard process to get them out. That's what it feels like. Just one clop after another, with no Navi to say, you know why that one happened? That one happened because of it. Not that people haven't, big people, much bigger than I, people who I can't even be said in the same name with sentence with, haven't tried to explain throughout history what it is. But the bottom line is, you would think after going through just, let's say, Crusade, Spanish Inquisition, Holocaust, Tach V'tat, the four big ones of the last 800 years, all we have is be religious. We have nothing more than a general, we're still in Gaulis. Right. That's it. Those are big clops we've taken. So Rav Harman was saying, Moral, that's right. We're out of the stage of into zichuch, into just by trial by fire, to purify. That's the thought I share. It's a sobering thought, but it's a sobering parsha. Parsha's b'chukosai is not necessarily an uplifting one. Even in the midst of all of the tochacha, you find psukim like what we studied that Rashi of the land will be desolate. That's a consolation. You'll see no one will be able to dwell in it but you. And when you see the land spring back to life, you know that the purification process, we're in the cool down. It's though we've been through it. The land is coming back. The land is alive.
Can we say that now, though?
I say it. I can't tell you if it's right or not, but I'm just telling you that I say it. I can't tell you if it's right. I don't know. Okay, quick vahalacha. Quick, less than 5 minutes. That's a shim. So I wanted to go over just some end of Shabbos stuff. So it'll be worthwhile of you. Probably you're familiar with all this, but we'll go over it anyway. Mechaber Paskas as follows: Shalashudis Noshim Chayovis Besuda Shlishis. Women are just as obligated to men when it comes to Shalashudis. So that is not a man thing. Even though men go to shul and mincha and they eat Shalashudis there, a woman is just as obligated to eat Shalashudis at home. What constitutes Shalashudis? The Mechaber, this is again men and women. The Mechaber brings down four opinions as to what one has to do to fulfill Shalashudis. Opinion number one:
wash
bread. That's the Mishnah Shalashudis. That is ideal. Ideally, within that opinion, number one is Lacha Mishnah with two loaves of bread, but even if you only had a slice of bread left over from lunch and it's not whole, that's also fine. That's the ideal way to fulfill Shalashudis is by washing a mitzvah on women equally upon men. If you can't wash, you don't want to wash, you could still fulfill Shalashudis. Opinion number two with? Mizonos. Not learning. With mizonos. With the food, it's a meal, you sit down and you say, I'm having Shalashudis. And it's with some type of mizonos. If you can't do mizonos, you're so stuffed, it's wintertime, you can't even imagine putting another mizonos product in your mouth. You could have a third option, says the Mechaber. This is Shulchan Aruch. Number three is fish meat, like a food, fish or meat. And fourth, he says, fruit. You can fulfill Shalashudis. Sometimes you should sit down and say, I am having a third meal, a covered Shabbos, and I'm having cantaloupe. But it's a meal. I'm sitting down and say, I'm having Shalashudis. Ideally, you should wash. This is true for men also. This is just as true these things, and this is not a women's issue. You should wash. If you can't wash, you should at least have cake. Can't have cake, you should at least have some meat or some fish. Can't do that at least food, but you need to have every single person as mechuyev to have three meals. When is the last you can start your meal? So it should be done ideally before Shkia. Ideally, and the reason for that is because once it is nightfall and Shabbos ends, you're not allowed to eat until you hear Havdalah. There's a lacha not to eat. You can't eat or drink except for water. You're allowed to have water. But other than water, you can't eat or drink until you hear Havdalah. So therefore, once it's after Shkia, then you're ready to enter into this quasi-period. Well, maybe it's ready, Shabbos is over, I can't eat. So therefore, you should start before Shkia. But if you miss it, because you're sitting down to have the mitzvah Shabbos Shudas, there is some leeway. 9 minutes, 13 minutes, different poskim. But you do have some leeway. Shkia is... there's a little bit of leeway. Some areas, Shkia is Shkia. There's no leeway. When it comes to Shabbos Shudas, there is. Because the whole reason why you can't eat is because of a Havdalah issue, and so there's a little bit of leeway when it comes to Shalosh. Last thing I just want to mention, and it comes up, I know, in my home regularly, is benching. So if you happen to Shalosh with some friends, you're sitting and you're schmoozing, having a great time, and all of a sudden your husband comes home, like, oh, I guess Shabbos is over. So now what do? So he's driven home already, and you're still sitting at Shalosh. So you need to bench. So do you bench with Ritzay? Do you not bench with Ritzay? You have Dalla, all stuff going on, and you have this confusing situation. So it's hopefully not so confusing. We'll just go over and you're hopefully getting familiar with all this. So the deal is as follows. If you have a husband who is not in any rush, and none of your children are banging down your door to hear Havdalah, so you should bench first. And even though it's way after nightfall, it's after 72 minutes, and you have a father-son learning, and you can still schmoozing over Shal Shudas. So as long as you've not heard Havdalah, or said Baruch HaMavdim Gosh L'chol, it's still Shabbos as far as you're concerned. And therefore, since your meal started during Shabbos, you would bench with Ritzay, even though your husband has driven your kids all over town and done all sorts of stuff. Let me just finish one thought. If, however, you come home and like, oh, we're still eating, we gotta make Havdalah, and you make Havdalah, once you make Havdalah, so then you've ended Shabbos. So then even though you ate during Shabbos, now that you're benching after you either heard of Dovah Sada Baruch HaMavdim Mekodesh L'chol, you can't say Ritzay anymore, even though your meal was a Shabbos meal, but you would not say Ritzay in benching because you've already ended Shabbos and you can't bench Shabbos benching when it's no longer Shabbos. So even though either way it's after nightfall, what we really care about is you personally. So it doesn't matter what your husband's done, doesn't matter what he said in shul. So if you're still eating Shabbos, if you finish eating or you haven't benched yet, even though it's late, you should bench with Ritzay. If you hear Havdalah, or you have to say Baruch Amal B'Kol Shechol because you have to drop your kids to wherever, you know that, so whatever, then already you would not say Ritzay. So just a quick review of some of the end of Shabbos, Shalosh Shudas benching issues. Comments, questions?
Is there an issue about how early you start Shalosh Shudas?
No. I mean, it should be after 6. I wouldn't worry about it. The only time it ever really becomes an issue is, sometimes the truth is it should be after 6.5 hours into the day, which means after the time you can have a mincha, which is on a perfect 6 to 6 day, 12:30 and on, which comes up on Erev Pesach when you have to eat Shal Shudas really early. Sometimes comes up. The only other time I've ever seen this is in a winter month, in which you say, you know what, let me just wash early. Like if you daven an early minyan, 8 o'clock. So instead of just having Kiddush, let's actually wash and bench at 10:30 for Kiddush, and then we'll wash and bench again at 12:30 for lunch. And not have to worry about it. Sometimes it gets a little early, but it's not your yotzei shal shudas regardless. It's ideal. Yeah, but it's your yotzei regardless. It's ideal to do it after 6.5 hours.
Gotcha.
So I'm guessing you're implying that if your husband comes home and he's not in a shower rush, and you just say, better to say, wait a second.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, because that way you can bench Shabbos benching.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, if you make Havdalah, so then already you have to you had a Shabbos meal, but you missed the opportunity. No, I mean, you still bench, but you miss the opportunity. So for sure, unless sometimes you're out of bench. It's crazy. And he's like, why are you still sitting at Shabbos?
Shit. Well, you forgot you didn't bench, and you say, I'm out of meal.
Correct. That happens all the time also. Yeah. That's why I forgot I didn't bench. And then so then you need to bench. Then the question is, do I still bench? Yes. You still bench. You just bench without Ritzay.
Right. Okay. But you still do Ritzay.
Correct. You would even do that on Malava Maka. That's right. You'd do Migdal, but you just everything else would be like regular weekday. All right. Under 5 minutes. All right. Next year in Yerushalayim.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.